This week's Light a Candle meeting podcast has been canceled due to technical problems. However, we will be replacing it this week with our OA birthday party sampler, a bit of many different talks from the OA birthday party in Los Angeles this past weekend. And if you are interested in purchasing CDs of this, go to our website, oalaig.org, to the birthday party page, and you will see PDFs there for ordering birthday party CDs, as well as CDs of the virtual speakers. That's actually courtesy of the San Fernando Valley Intergroup. Also, starting next week, we will be replacing all of our speaker files with speaker files without the birthday party announcements.
I am wishing a very grateful recovering compulsive overeater. And I was asked to read this before I begin. For all leaders of workshops, please announce, if you would like to purchase a CD of this workshop, it will be available afterwards in the hospitality room for $7 per CD, or you can purchase the entire set of the complete 48th OA birthday celebration, including all panels, workshops, and speakers, for just $60. That's the entire weekend. Also for sale throughout the weekend will be the entire San Fernando Valley Intergroup's library of tapes and CDs. So I'd just like to say after that last paragraph, I don't live here anymore, but we were visiting, and we were living in Nashville, Tennessee at the time. And they gave me money, I bought a whole bunch of tapes from the San Fernando Valley Intergroup and brought them back to Nashville. So there's a lot of people that are benefiting from that recovery. So the CDs are great. So now, again, I'm Richie, grateful compulsive overeater. And it's such a privilege to be here. And it's an honor, and it just humbles me to come back and see all the loving faces that I've known over the years. But most important to me, I was looking at the countdown. There was a bunch of people, less than 30 days. And there must be some newcomers in here. And I remember, you know, everyone in this room, including 37 years, was a newcomer, was in their first 30 days. And I remember you guys told me that you would love me till I could love myself. And I came in here full of self-hatred, full of guilt, full of shame, and it was hard for me to even like myself. And you guys, you know, cuddled me and hugged me and told me to keep coming back no matter what. And, you know, I always say, where else can you go and get up at a podium or at a meeting and say, well, last night I ate a frozen pizza and a bunch of Haagen-Dazs and this, and we all have... keep coming back, you know. So, you know, for all you new people who are in your first 30 days or whatever, we'll love you till you can't help but love yourself. And I often said I came in here full of self-hatred, and after getting all the love and support that I got in this room, and my sponsor taking me through the 12 steps and you know, loving me no matter what, I said I love myself so much I bought myself a ring, you know. So I went from that self-hatred to that. And what happened for me, I'm going to share my experience, strength, and hope about this being a threefold disease, physical, emotional, and spiritual, and my journey in those three areas. And, you know, the first part was physical, and I went to a meeting that I don't think the building's there anymore. And, oh, by the way, Wendy, you're not the only person I don't remember one time. I'm getting up there, you know, in years. And it's like, since I came here, you know, early this evening, and someone would go, Richie, how are you? I go, and I try to, like, glance at their name tag, and their is a good friend of mine who I love dearly for years, and she had us on backwards. So all I saw was tilapia. Yeah. So, it doesn't mean that I don't love you. It just means that, I'm challenged sometimes. Senior moments, as we call them. But, so physically, when I first came in, I was over 400 pounds in July 1979. And I brought pictures with me this weekend that I'll be carrying the whole weekend. So if you see me in the hallway, anyone wants to see what I used to be like, I'd be happy to share those pictures with you. And I remember at my first meeting, there was this beautiful young girl from UCLA who was sharing at the meeting. And my first thing was, what do I have in common with her? What am I doing here? There weren't any guys in the room, what? And she passed her pictures around, and it blew me away. And that was the first ray of hope that I got, that somebody could lose all that weight and look so good and be happy, You know, I had lost over 100 pounds 7-8 times with various diets or whatever. And people would say to me, gee, you look great, how are you doing? I said, I'm doing great. Why? Do I look like I'm not doing great to you? Because I was probably on some speed or something, And it was like, I didn't know if I was happy, sad, glad, mad, or whatever, because I was anesthetized with diet pills or whatever it was. But I came to these rooms, and people, like we said, were not a glum lot. You know, people were happy, and my first sponsor not only had lost over 100 pounds and kept it off, and he was also sober, but he was happy. And that pissed me off. You know what I mean? It's like, and then it's like, if you want what we have, ask us how we got it and do it. So I asked him, I said, I want what you have, could you be my sponsor? And I asked about 12 people before that. And I'm not good at rejection, but I got rejected. Well, I'm sorry, I'm too busy, or you're too weird, or whatever. Whatever it was. And he said, okay, I want you to read the preface to the big book and call me tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. And I said, you don't understand, I'm an actor. And when I'm in between projects, I'm not up that early. He said, well, then call somebody else. And I said, I'll teach him, I'll call him. So I read the thing, I called him, and that's how I started being weaned through the steps, through the 12 steps. And he would tell me to read a chapter or read a paragraph or whatever, and then give him a synopsis of what I read. And one morning I called him at 10 after 7, and he said, what time do you have? I said, 10 after 7. He said, call me tomorrow at 7, and hung up. But I did it. I was desperate enough, and I did it. And as a result, I started losing weight. And I would come into the rooms, Gardner Street, that's where my first meeting was. And got to remember Gardner Street? Yes. Okay. I got to raise hand. And people would come in there and eat. It was bizarre, but I would come back every week and I would say, well, I'm not into this goth crap like you guys, but I lost another 7 pounds this week, and you guys would applaud and hug me, and I kept coming back. And at that time, and this is my physical recovery, they gave me a gray sheet abstinence. And I could tell you today that I've done gray sheet, blue sheet, white sheet, no sheet, this sheet, that sheet. And the only thing that keeps me abstinence is my spiritual recovery. That's it. It's that simple.
This morning we're going to be doing a workshop on applying the principles of the program, no matter what. And we have three great speakers this morning to share their experience, strength, and hope. One of them is, we have three. to share their experience, strength, and hope with applying the principles in their lives. So without further ado, who wants to be first? Sandy? Okay. I'm going to introduce Sandy, and she's going to be our first speaker. Please welcome Sandy.
I love that phrase, who wants to?
It's like your time, Sandy.
1 minute at a time. Let's do 25 and 5.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? Make it 10. 10, 10, and 10. So I know, because I've got 4. I'm Sandy, compulsive reader. Welcome everybody here. Just to give you a little background, I have 21 years of abstinence. I came in here when I was 3 years old. I used to be 6 feet tall, and I shrunk, because of age. This program has absolutely saved my life. So I'm going to be talking about the first 4 principles, which is the first 4 steps. You know, lie about everything. I lied from just about everything. I was abused as a child, and I had to lie about my whole life as I was growing up. So when it came to be doing my 4th step and being really honest about lying or cheating, I did all that stuff so I could survive. Because that's the only way I knew how to survive, was by doing lying, cheating, stealing. I can't remember. Jackie, what are some of the other words? Do you remember? That we did in...
Pride, ego.
Ego, yeah. Pride, ego.
Sex.
Yeah, sex. Yeah, no, sex. Let's talk about sex. yeah. But, you know, it's those kind of things that you really lie about. You can't be honest. You're so afraid to let anybody know. So you carry that your whole life. And here I was with a piece of paper and a pencil, a pen, and every night I would sit there and write on one of the words until I felt I was done. And then if I couldn't finish on it, I'd go to the next word and write on it. And go to the next one. I would come back and go over some of the others. You know, that's what I did with my life. Ego. Who doesn't have an ego when they walk in here? Everybody who didn't have an ego when you walked in here, please raise your hand. Oh, okay, good. Okay, so I feel at home. Yeah, of course, you know, I have no problems. I'm fine. I'm popular. People like me. I'm great. Bull. Pucky. I'm being recorded. I don't want to say anything bad. But you know what? When I started writing, I realized my ego was way out of proportion. Way out there. I needed to bring my ego down to the level where I was like everybody else. That I was so-called whatever normal is. The 4th step helped me become normal. And you know, when you have to write about honesty, you know, being honest, that's what the 4th step's about. When writing about hope, you know, hope that, you know, through these words that you're writing, that you'll come out on the other side of feeling so great about yourself. But it's not the ego type. It's the type of feeling like, oh my God, I can't believe I can feel like this after all these years. That I am somebody of worth. That I am somebody who wants to live. I didn't want to live. I mean, I was willing to die all the way through my whole life. I mean, I wanted to go to jail. I did things... If anybody ever saw The Bad Seed with Patty McCormick, I'm her. I set my porch on fire at home. I set the toilet seat on fire hoping the whole house would burn down. I thought the water would absorb into the Kleenex, you know, so it wouldn't burn, but don't try it. It doesn't work. I threw a can at a neighbor of mine, cut her lip. And I ran away from home when I was little. I did all this stuff so I wouldn't have to. I thought anything, even living in jail, would be better for me. So coming from there to here, into a place where I love my life. I love my life. These first four steps, to me, were the most important steps for me. Because if I can't get to these first four steps, I could not move on. If I couldn't do the first step, I couldn't move on. What was I going to move to? Nowhere. If I couldn't be honest with myself. You know, I'm going to talk a little bit about my program. My program is, I practice the first three steps every single day. Every single day. I came in here with nothing, and I have everything in my life that I want today. I came in here, I am gay. I've been in a relationship for 23 years. And, you know, I used to hide because I didn't want anybody to know. And then I said, why am I doing this? I'm a normal human being like anybody else. What my preference is mine. If you don't like it, that's your choice. But I'm allowed to be me. And I got to tell you something, that feeling is so powerful because I can be me and I can let people into my life now to enjoy my life with my partner. I just had a 60th birthday party and we had a lot of people from OA and everything else. And I got to tell you something, it was a great mixture of people and they were people that I love. I had friends there that I'd known for 40 years. My family was there. I could have never done this before. Never have a life like I have now. You know, here I am 60 years old at the gym, and I wish I could show you. But I am like that. I am solid. You know, how many 60-year-olds? I went to my nutritionist, and we did a body fat and everything else, and she goes, oh my God, do you know how many 60-year-olds want your body? She goes, do you know I want your body? No, I've never had people say, I want you. You know, but you know, my life is amazing. I have a job that I never thought I could have in my life, that I love. I have people that I work with that I love. I deal with like 5,000 people, and I have a blast with every one of them. And the boss at my job on where I work said to me, I can never retire until she retires. And I'm going, oh, really? And she's younger than I am. And you know, I never heard that in my life. I never heard that until this program. I never heard that I could become this other Sandy, where people come and give me a hug because they want to, not because I beg them to. I am loved.
She's from New York, so I knew I absolutely had to have her as the luncheon speaker. I'm very pleased to introduce our luncheon speaker, Anita R.
Okay, I'm Anita. Very grateful, compulsive eater, or overeater. You know, it's very hard to put 21 years into 30 minutes, so I've made some notes. I didn't do that before, but I wanted to share with you the highlights of my life in OA. I came into OA over 35 years ago, and one more time I was looking for the magic diet. They called it the green sheet then. I took a 21-year candle last August, so you can figure that out, how long it took me. My story is how that woman, 35 years ago, became the abstinent, healthy person I am today. We've all had trials and tribulations in our lives. My dad was a compulsive gambler who I loved dearly. He was also a compulsive overeater. Sadly, he died when he was 45 years old from a heart attack. I was only 17 years old. My mother was an emotional abuser. She was incapable of loving anyone. My older brother was also a compulsive gambler and spent much of his youth and his adulthood in jail. My younger brother became a drug addict and eventually was sent to jail for selling drugs. I was 10 pounds, 11 ounces at birth. So I claimed to be the original compulsive overeater. I kept trying different diets, and in time I reached a size 20. Now, I would love to tell you how much I weighed, but I would never get on a scale. But I'm 5 feet tall, ladies. You can imagine what I look like at size 20. At 20 years of age, I married and moved to Memphis, Tennessee, where my husband attended professional school. The day I left New York, my mother disowned me and said she never wanted to see me or speak to me again. 3 months later, I had a complete nervous breakdown and was on phenobarbital for the next 3 years. Having no family or friends in Memphis was very hard for me, and that first year I gained 60 pounds. The first time I came to OA 35 years ago, I knew it was different. People were sharing things I had never heard before. They admitted hiding food and binging. All the shameful things I did, they were doing too. Unfortunately, at that time, I wasn't ready to admit my life was out of control, even though I knew I was a compulsive overeater. I needed to go out and eat some more and become bankrupt emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually. I needed to go through that downhill slide. My last binge was at a Bond supermarket, a block from the school I worked. I left the school, and mind you, you know what a teacher, I mean, everybody respects her and looks up to her. The students, the parents, the principal. I went into the supermarket. I'm a sugarholic, so I took everything off the shelves like a lunatic, put them in my bag, went out to my car, and sat there in broad daylight, ripping open bags, ripping over boxes, and eating. I mean, anyone could have looked in and seen what I was doing. Miss Professional, you know, from two blocks away. I did not care. That's what I needed to do. I started to cry. And even though I didn't believe in God at that time, I asked God to please help me. I had no spoons, no forks. The food just dripped down my clothes into the car. I didn't care. I drove away, and at the first block where I didn't see any people, I opened the window and I threw those boxes out into the street. Does that sound like a sane adult woman? That's where I was. I was in complete despair, and God must have heard me. Because a few weeks later, I was at a birthday party brunch, and I was coming, walking over to my table with a plate of food, a compulsive overeater's plate of food. And as I walked to my table to sit down, I looked at this woman's plate that was sitting next to me. You know how we are always looking at other people's plates? What is that about? And this poor woman was eating a normal plate of food. I was just staring at it in disbelief. And she caught me looking at her. And she looked up at me and she said, "I eat a certain way." And I knew. It was like a light bulb went on over my head. And I bent down to her and she said, "I go to OA." And I said, "Oh, I know. You're going to be my Eskimo."
Welcome to the Overeaters Anonymous panel entitled Finding God. Was he, she, it hiding? My name's Patty and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Patty. Hi, my name is Christina. I'm a food addict.
Hi.
So grateful to be here. Okay. So basically, I came into the program when I was 19 in Boston, Massachusetts, in 1986. And it was pretty much everyone did the same thing in those days. But in a nutshell, I used to go to meetings on substances, binging, you know, sitting in the back, poor me, wearing black. I was in theater school, you know, blah, 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 that whole scene. And then I got abstinent the year to the day that I came in, January 1st, 1987, and I haven't had to, my abstinence is basically sugar. White refined sugar is, you know, I can't stop. It's like one of those things. So anyways, on the East Coast at that time, and I think it was probably across the country, it was everyone ate the same thing. You weighed and measured your food. And it was just, we did the drill, basically. And I came in and got abstinent before anything happened. It was just physical. I had to get physically abstinent. And I lost 40 pounds in 2 months. No, you know, the no carb, you know, it's pretty much like that was the way it was. And I went to these really amazing meetings that people were so serene. No one drank coffee in those days. It was like you might as well have been drinking booze in meetings. You know, it was really the OA nunnery when at that time. It was really, and I loved it. I love lists, and I like being a good girl. So I was like, oh, I can finally be good, you know. So anyways, so I started doing the steps with this group, and it was great. It was we read the steps, but in a very sort of slow way. It wasn't like let's read the, you know, my natural state is let's do it fast. You know, let's just get through it. I can skim it. But we read it in a very refined, clear way. And my whole thing, and I don't know why I remember this so clearly. You know, I thought if I didn't do the drill, like make the 3 calls a day, read the 24-hour book, we had to read a page of the big book at night. I just only knew OA people. I didn't talk to anyone else. I was just in my little world with my little Tupperware. You know, everyone, we would have dinner together and eat Tupperware. It was so, oh my God. But anyways, thank God for those days. So it was 6 months and I used to call people and I'd be like, I don't know who God is. And they're like, don't worry about it. It's going to happen. Just relax. You know, it's fine. And I did go through the steps, and it was that fourth step experience, you know, where you write all that stuff down and you turn it over and you think this person's going to think I'm, you know, a scum bucket. And for doing just... You know, for us, I think it's just secrets, our little weird secrets. And but literally at 6 months, I kind of got the flu. And when I get sick, being very sensitive, I go crazy. I just get very hallucinatory. And I sort of had a spiritual awakening. I was like, and being brought up, you know, I'm Italian, Irish, Catholic. Not that I practice anymore, but, you know, being brought up with all that kind of imagery, there was a piece of it that just struck me, and I was like, oh, that's my higher power. I mean, it was so exciting. I was like, So all these people would come up to me, and I was 20 years old, and they would give me those saints cards, and I would sleep with them. You know, that beginning sort of experience of you're getting your life back and yourself back. And I got this picture of a thing, and part of that religion. And it just was so... I lived in the north end of Boston, which was, you might as well just, it's one bakery. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it was like, we eat. I mean, my grandparents were like, food is love. And I would be like, no, it's not. You know, because I had heard, and I would say these things to my family, the truth will set you free. And they'd be like, where did you hear that? You know, and I was like, it's not enough. So, you know, we'd have these massive Italian meals. I mean, I would bring my little friends over from prep school. It was story for them. You know, my grandmother and great-grandmother saying the F word to each other. And she's like, and I was like, oh, they're not angry at each other. That's just talking. And, you know, so I'm getting abstinent during this time at these big Italian meals, eating my little weight-and-measure meal. And I felt so protected. And I felt that I had a best friend. It's just a complete best friend. And I've been abstinent 21 years, and I will tell you, for 10 years I did the same thing. And when people would say, I don't have perfect abstinence, I'd be like, well, I'm sorry for you, because I do. You know, I was in my 20s, that whole, like, I got it all down sort of thing. I mean, I would give people advice that are married. I mean, I have no skills on that. And when I have children, I was like, well, here's what you have to do. You know, and here I am, like, mid-single, angry lady who, you know, who's so solo. And, you know, and I was, you know, giving people advice. But within it all, you know, being imperfect over the last 21 years and making tons of mistakes and lying and smashing cars and leaving that, you know, doing awful things. Not awful, like murderous things, but, you know, lying, basically. And then in that justification, I'd be like, is that okay? And it would be like, yeah, that's fine. Mm-hmm. That'll be fine. Yep. Speeding away. You know, things like that. I can do that. That's not a problem. Oh, it's, yes. And then realizing, oh, my God, uh-oh. And within all that, I mean, I think Bill Wilson says it, too. We can do anything. We just have to be willing to make the amends. And that doesn't necessarily mean to the outside world. We just have to clean up or tell someone or however you work that. But, you know, even today, you know how we get the blues some mornings? And my three-quarters Irish bones get very, my friend calls it bittersweet. I get I said, this is a very melancholy day. He's like, yeah, I know. And it could be sunny out. I'm like, I'm very sad. And I globalize. And within all that, it's that connection to HP that it's so private, you know. I mean, even to talk about it in detail feels like, but I think the thing is, like with OA, like with the food, you gotta find the thing that works for you.
Hi, I'm Barbara, compulsive overeater. Hi, everybody. It's such a pleasure to be here, and what an honor. It's taken me 32 years of continuous abstinence to get this opportunity to share at the birthday party. Yay! It's a big deal for me, I got to tell you that. And I've been really, you know, nervous, and one of my dear friends said, so? Kind of like, okay. I feel like I've told my story now for 32 years, and so what can I share with you? First of all, I don't think I know everyone in the room, and so I'm going to tell you why I'm here. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm here because I need to be, and I'm here by the grace of God. I'd never heard of Overeaters Anonymous until shortly before arriving on the doorsteps of my first meeting. Which, P.S., I'm very determined, and the first meeting that I thought I was going to was actually the following night. So that led me to another binge, because that's what I did no matter what happened. And I got to the meeting the following week, and the person who is my sponsor today was actually standing on the stage, and she said that she had weighed 300 and something pounds, and she was a little stick, a shadow of a person. She was tiny person. And I knew she was lying. I knew as sure as I'm standing here that this woman was lying, because that was absolutely impossible. Because when I walked into OA, I weighed 180 pounds, and that was not my top weight. I stopped weighing at 189, and once I started eating, no matter where I was, what I was doing, I couldn't stop eating until I was passed out. That was it. And most of the time, it was two or three binges a day. And the obsession started with the first bite. And every day was another diet, and every day was another failure, and I had thousands and thousands and thousands of those experiences before coming to OA, where I was beaten down by what I didn't know was a disease. And before coming to the program, about a year before, I started thinking that that I had some characteristics that might be similar to the alcoholics that I was beginning to learn about through a friend of mine who was taking a college course, and the instructor happened to be a man who was an active AA member who did not believe in the principle of anonymity. And so he spoke to his college class about his experience as an alcoholic, along with whatever else the topic of the subject was. And she shared it with me. And it really drove home to me with every time that she shared that I probably was a something or other like an alcoholic, and I didn't know the name for it. And then I started seeing signs on the freeway. I saw bumper stickers, easy does it, one day at a time, live and let live. And I started thinking there was like a private secret society in Los Angeles. And it gave me reason to feel really left out. You know, and I developed hurt feelings over just the universe in general. Like, how come I don't know about this place? And there's some commonality among these people with these bumper stickers, and I didn't know what the secret was. Until I came to OA, and that was in June 1975. I had just turned 25 years old, and I felt as old as the mountains. I felt empty inside. My days were I was so depressed. I didn't have any hope. I felt like my life would never change because of one thing. This thing that I didn't know was a disease, which is, I'm a compulsive overeater and I have a disease and it's not my fault. I felt it was a moral issue. I felt that I should be able to control this thing. I should be able to stop. I was shooting myself everywhere that I looked, and it was something that was cunning, baffling, and powerful, and I didn't understand that. All I knew is that every day I had the same thinking. Squirrel cage thinking. I wanted to lose weight. I couldn't do it. I had been an intermittent dieter for many years. Many years. I was 25 years old. It felt like many years. I was a normal weight as a kid, and at the age of, I think, about 13, my family started observing my eating habits were changing, and at that point I was going through a growth spurt, and I was eating as much as my father, who had a very physical job. He was a mailman, and he was 5'11", and I ate as much as he did. And we sat down at the dinner table, and he had a second plate of spaghetti or steak or whatever it was. I would do the same thing, and here I was, like 5'4", and I was consuming as much food as he was. And at the time, there was no demonstration of that on my body because I was growing so fast, but that started to change. And I also started noticing some interesting behavior patterns, which I thought were interesting because, again, I didn't see any kind of a physical change, and I wasn't getting fat, and the obsessive thinking had not really hit hard and taken hold yet. And I started doing things at the nutrition class, which is interesting what they serve at nutrition in the public school system. Most of us have probably been there. So I had the Nestle candy bars and the rolls and cake, which I had a ritual for eating cake. It had to be upside down. And I had a methodology for eating the cake. By the time I graduated high school, I was 153 pounds. I started high school at 115. And in my second year of college, where I dropped out twice because of, I believe, the disease of compulsive overeating, I hit 189 pounds. And I remember sitting in the parking lot and just between classes eating and crying because I had no control over what I did after I took the first compulsive bite. And at that time, I still remember the memory. I started off at Pierce College. I had no confidence in my ability to, even though I had a strong B average in high school, that I could really go to college. So I never really applied. I just went to Pierce College. There really were no qualifications or requirements other than paying whatever it was, $6 a unit or whatever we paid. And I was, it was summer, and I was wearing a suede jacket, and I was sitting in the car without air conditioning and feeling sorry for myself and crying. And I was consumed with self-pity and resentment. Those were, I think, my favorite emotions. And it took me quite a while, another 6 years before I found Overeaters Anonymous. And in that period of time, I lost my weight. I got back on track in college, and I graduated college at my goal weight because I had this idea that I couldn't go on my dream vacation, which was to go to Europe, unless I was at my goal weight. And everything in my mind was always associated with the way that I looked and the way things were on the outside. And superficial to the max, you know, that was my training as a kid. I never questioned it. That was just the way that I thought. And I dropped out of college a couple of times. I ate my way through college. I had chocolate paw prints on all of my books. And it just, that was how I got through. And really, that was the best that I could do at the time. I went to Europe, and my plan was to stay for 3 or 4 months, and I stayed for 11 and a half months. And that was certainly not because I was having such a delightful time, although I had a lot of wonderful experiences and very interesting adventures, and I went to far more places than I had ever intended to. And that was because I started eating again. Within 10 days of arriving in England, I started eating. And to me, to start eating means that it doesn't stop. And I remember when I first arrived, I was staying at a youth hostel. And I had lost my weight, and everyone had applauded my accomplishments. You graduated with your 4-year degree, and you lost your weight, and I stopped going to the therapist I had seen for 2 consecutive years, who I believe was really keeping me alive, and the accolades were thrown in my direction, and so there was something wrong. I didn't know what it was, but there was just a hollow feeling in my gut. And when everyone congratulated me and applauded my accomplishments at that point in my life, I felt like there was something missing, and I didn't know what it was. Because I had always addressed my problems on one level, and that was physical. And until I came to this program did I really begin to get an inkling of really the nature of my problem and my disease. And that it is physical, emotional, and spiritual. And until I addressed it on those all three levels, was I able to even consider, was abstinence a possibility for me?
Without further ado, it is my pleasure to introduce Carol.
Hi, I'm Carol. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm also a sponsor. I have some reason why I'm the closing speaker, and maybe not, probably not because of my spirituality. Let's see, and those of you that resent me about we moved to this room, it was my idea. And the reason why it was my idea is because I walked that room over there and it felt dirty and it felt like housekeeping had been in there. And we deserve a clean room. We deserve a room that we feel fresh and clean. So that was why I looked at this and looked behind me and looked at there was this stuff around. It just felt like a dirty room. And I thought, you know, let's go where it's bright and cheery. And this room felt more bright and cheery. So you got an opinion? You got an attitude? If you lost a safe seat in the front row, you can still see me because I can see every one of you. So get over it. If you're not over it, call your sponsor in the morning and bitch and complain. Anyway, let's see. You already heard the number that I have 29 years of absence. If you look on the webpage, it's 28. I guess the webpage was created before I, back in last year, before I had my 29th birthday. So, and also, my top weight is around 325 pounds, give or take. This scale didn't really weigh me. It was, the top weight on the scale was 300 pounds. So either I topped out that 300 plus pounds or the metal that supported that scale did not support 275 pounds. And so I don't know what it really was. Bottom line is, I was fat. And the bottom line is, today I'm not. And the bottom line is, my life has changed dramatically in the past 29 years. I'm 52 years old, which means that over half my life I've been abstinent. And I'm very clear about in the Big Book where it says that that our thinking changes, we become healthy. I have a therapist, and I talk to my therapist, and I talk about how I have a healthy attitude about life. I have a healthy attitude, I process stuff in a very healthy manner. I'm a very healthy individual. But I'm still a compulsive overeater. That will never go away. I still have addictive quality food. A brief kind of description of where I came from so you know that I'm a compulsive overeater. My high school years were horrible. It was, you know, I mean, I have my fat pictures, and if you want to see my fat picture, come to the kitchen sink. Or ask me to speak at your meeting, you know, and I'll bring my fat picture. And it really was, I was miserable, and I discovered Overeaters Anonymous the first time when I was 17, and I came in, I didn't. At my first meeting, and it's very important for me to remember this, at my first meeting, this man got up and said he lost 100 pounds. And it gave me that one thing I never had before that, and that was hope. And I've heard you say this before, but it really was my concept that there was two types of people on this planet. There was thins and there was fats. And occasionally a fat became a thin, but a thin never became a fat. I mean, the thin became a fat, but a fat never became a thin. And here I am at 300 plus pounds, and I knew that I could never, ever be a normal body size. Never. That was just beyond my comprehension. But yet, here I saw a man in a 12-step program, and I knew enough that in 12-step programs you were honest, that he was not lying to me, and it gave me hope. And there's one thing I can always offer to anyone, is hope that this program works, that I've kept my weight off for 29 years, that it can happen to anyone, because I have to tell you how sick I was. So you know that you're not the sickest, even though you want to be the sickest. Even though I want to be the sickest, even though I feel like 325 pounds is not enough weight when I hear there's 400 plus pounds, you know. We always want to, our ego wants to go someplace else that makes us less than or different. And that's one thing that this program has taught me is that I'm not different. The literature says no one likes to make his mind and body different from his fellows, and yet we are. And we are different from our fellows because I am a compulsive overeater. And I will never, ever be a normal eater. I will never, ever have a normal relationship with food. I remember driving home from my sponsor's house going, okay, God, you and me, we're going to do what? We're going to go have fun. We're going to go live my life to help those people of Overeaters Anonymous. Let's go enjoy life. I'm going to eat what I want, when I want, to help those people. I'm going, God, you're going to help me. God, you're going to do all this stuff. And I was doing a lot of talking to God. And I've learned that spirituality has nothing about talking to God. It has everything to do with listening. So I was too busy talking to God about what I was going to do and how he was going to help me to listen to what I needed to do. So what happened about 3 or 4 weeks later on January 5th, 1979, I broke that abstinence on 2 pieces of toast. And as you all know, if I was doing that in my last binge, I would have done better. My abstinence has always been no sugar and no flour. He said, no, I'm a hopelessly addicted donut addict. And I told you why I love donuts. I don't know how to eat one cracker. I don't know how to eat one strand of dried spaghetti, which was my binge food in high school, because no one could count the dried spaghetti. They could count bread, but they didn't count dried spaghetti. I don't know how to eat one sliver of German chocolate cake without it talking to me, beckoning me, mentioning my name, telling me how sweet it is, how good it was, how lovely it was, how it's going to help me feel just a little bit better, give me that warm glow. I don't know how to eat food like that. So I find if I don't start, I have to stop. As the saying goes, zero is easier than one. And I want to be easy. I want to make this abstinence easy. So if I have to fight every time I try to stop eating, then I'm eating the wrong foods. That kind of brings up my pet peeve. I'm an opinionated old-timer. Everyone knows that. I have an opinion. Some people will ask me for my opinion. Other people walk out of the room because they don't care about my opinion. But I'm on the podium, so I get to tell my opinion. I hear this all the time in meetings about how we got it worse than alcoholics because we got to walk the tiger 3 times a day. And an alcoholic told me, you know what? I used to drink screwdrivers. And when I drink a glass of orange juice, I get thirsty for a screwdriver. To me, an obsession is an obsession. If you're obsessed with food, then you're right. It's more difficult if you're fighting the obsession every day. But if you ask God to remove the obsession will be removed and you're not fighting food. If you're honest about what you can and cannot eat, you will not have the conscious struggle of trying to stop. But if you have a conscious struggle of trying to stop with love with bread, you might have an issue with bread. If you have a hard time trying to stop after having one slice of a cookie, and one cookie, you might have a problem with cookies. That's my opinionated old-timer opinion.